This is Brian Nickel, your host for AEC Perspectives. Today, we're going to talk about the Hillsborough County Aviation Authority, and more specifically, the sustainability and resiliency efforts of Tampa International Airport. I'm joined by two wonderful guests, Eric Kaplan and Ben Moore. First, let me introduce Eric Kaplan. Eric is the Sustainability and Resilience Program Director for Tampa International Airport. He is a Florida native, born and raised in St. Petersburg. Before entering the fields of sustainability and resiliency, Eric achieved a bachelor's in environmental studies from the University of Central Florida and a double master's from the University of Florida, one in natural resources and policy and the other in environmental engineering. At Tampa International, Eric supports community sustainability initiatives and promotes the airport's sustainability efforts to the public at large. He internally manages the Sustainable Management Plan, the Resilience Action Plan, and the Airport Carbon Accreditation Program. Ben Moore serves as a sustainability leader for RSNH. Ben has recently managed successful sustainability and resilience efforts for diverse large hub airports. His areas of expertise are broad and interdisciplinary, reflecting a solutions-oriented approach to the complex challenges posed by climate change. In addition to resilience, Ben's diverse experience encompasses energy and water management, greenhouse gas accounting, alternative fuel programs, high performance infrastructure, and cost benefit analysis. Eric, Ben, it's great to have you on this episode of AEC Perspectives.
We're happy to be here.
Yeah, pleasure to be here, Brian. Thank you for having me.
Well, you know, we're going to talk about all things resiliency, and I want to start off by recognizing the great mission that the Tampa International Airport has undertaken and the stewardship that you've brought to the airport, Eric. Tampa International is on a mission to create an environmentally friendly airport. In 2014, Tampa received its first grant to create a sustainability plan. And since then, Tampa has received the ACI Airport Carbon Accreditation, making it the first and only airport in Florida to receive this accreditation. And currently, Tampa tracks carbon emissions through all operations, including maintenance vehicles and transportation. Your office building, Eric, is LEED certified, and you were the first airport to earn the bike-friendly business recognition. What an outstanding record, and I'm so pleased to have you on this episode of AEC Perspectives. Let's jump right into our questions. Eric, tell me why resilience, and tell our listeners why resilience is important for the Hillsborough County Aviation Authority broadly, but certainly for the Tampa International Airport specifically.
Sure. Yeah, thank you, Brian. Resilience is important for many different factors. One being we obviously are a very important asset throughout Tampa Bay area, providing a very important service that is widely used. So we've got that obligation to our customers first and foremost to make sure that we're steady, we're always operational, we can always provide that service to them. In addition to that, we're very involved in supply chain. We've got the Amazons, the UPSs at our campus as well. So there's really a lot leaning on our campuses to kind of stay up and active. But Tampa International Airport really holds a lot of values and does everything kind of at 100%. And so we view this work and planning and the investment we put in as just part of the things that we do, whether it's sustainability, resilience. We kind of put everything into it. We like being that leader. We like being that industry leader, regional leader. And so that's certainly a motivation for us as well. But last but certainly not least, we're in a very vulnerable area. Tampa Bay is really one of the more vulnerable areas in the world when it comes to lots of different weather events, climate threats, and in order to keep that asset going and that level of service that we pride ourselves in, resilience planning is becoming increasingly important really throughout our campus.
Yeah, and I appreciate that view, because we think of an airport as well, the airport exists for people to come in and out, but it's not just people, it's goods. It serves, as you said, as an asset and a service to the broader community. And so resiliency is now at the core of your mission. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's good to add that element of the why in which we do it, you know, not just airlines coming to and from, but supply chain issues. And not only that, but we're actually a very big employer to the Tampa Bay area as well. So that there's a lot of residents and staff, whether it be Tampa Airport staff, TSA, FAA, that all rely on Tampa International Airport and our campuses for their livelihoods. And so we have that responsibility and obligation to them as well to do this planning.
And I appreciate what you said about being not only an industry in a regional, but a state leader when it comes to resiliency. And I know you take that you have that goal, but you take that job, if you will, very seriously. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, we do. I mean, a lot of it goes back to just how vulnerable of a region that we're in and location that we're in. You know, Florida itself, whether it be Tampa Bay area, whether it be East Coast, South Florida, we're all facing very similar threats and similar obligations to our to the people that we serve. So we want to be on the forefront of this type of planning. We want to be an inspiration, a leader. Certainly, we want to do it industry-wide and across the nation, across the world. But Florida is very, very particular in the threats in which we're facing. And we want to be on the forefront of kind of inspiring that direct change within our state, showing other campuses, but certainly other airports, how we all should be, you know, adjusting to this changing world and really kind of showcase our values as well.
Let's talk about an airport's role. And if you could you expand on this notion of what an airport's role in helping a community withstand and or recover from disruptions?
Yeah, I think that's a really big piece as to the why we do this resilience planning. Of course, we're a very important asset for the commercial reasons, but when it comes to a particular event, you know, a storm, whatever that might be, we become increasingly important to the community. I mean, one, we are how most community members are getting out of the region, you know, in the case that they may need to evacuate, they may need to move the family. We need to keep that operation up and running and up and running as long as possible so that we can help the evacuation of our community. In addition to on the back end, you know, when we're on the recovery end, we need to be open as quick as possible so the community members can get back to their homes, their families as well. So we have that priority first and foremost. But in addition to that, you know, during the storm or particularly right after during relief efforts, we are there for supplies and delivery of supplies if needed as well. So we play an emergency role. We're directly tied with the city and the county's emergency operations center. You never know what could go down during a storm. You never know what the Port of Tampa's impact or other airfields. So our airfields are very, very important for the potential delivery of supplies during an event as well.
Now, Ben, you've worked with airports, as I noted in the introduction, these large hub airports all over the country. Talk about it from your standpoint and in working with airports and how important that is to help them have a plan to keep the community open for as long as possible, as Eric said, and then quickly reopen. What's critical in your mind?
Well, you know, they really are the hub of the recovery effort. you know, the roads that lead into a place that's been impacted by a storm, for example, may not be passable immediately after a storm. A port is likely to be closed for days or weeks after a storm. So the airport is the one that can really get open quickly and start to bring in that relief effort fast. So at Tampa International or any airport, when we think about resilience, we start with first understanding the threats, the shocks and the stressors that could, you know, really affect the airport. In Tampa's case, you know, the one that we're most worried about is storm surge from a hurricane. And the storm surge in Tampa could be quite severe, probably one of the more dramatic storm surge potentials in America. 30 feet at parts of their campus could be underwater in a direct hit from a Category 5 storm. It's important to understand that is the shock that they need to worry about. And then the shock in Portland, you know, Oregon is totally different. It's an earthquake, for example. Once we understand what those shocks are, we start to think about how those shocks could impact various assets. So it could be the airfield electrical vault or the pavement itself, or it could be you know, how it affects the terminal buildings and the electrical systems and the HVAC systems and the life safety systems. And then we are able to start to prioritize, you know, how those combinations of threats and assets, some are more important than others to the criticality of the airport or to the recovery of the airport. We can start to rank them and put them in some sort of order. And because there aren't infinite resources and the airport has to be nimble and agile, once we have a list of the kind of the top most vulnerable assets, then we have taken something that seems kind of impossible to take on, a bite that's too big to take. We've made it into small little bites, and we can start to develop projects that respond to those vulnerabilities that can be, you know, planned and designed and moved into the capital program. And I think it's Tampa's intention, Eric can talk more about it, is to take those little bites between now and the foreseeable future, so that every day they can sort of take their vulnerability, which seems daunting, and shrink it year by year, and have some readiness built in.
Yeah, and that looks like a coordinated, very calculated, very collaborative approach. Eric, can you talk about how taking those small bites really gets you to the place where you need to be?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Ben just kind of nailed it. I mean, particularly with our resilience planning, it's exactly the approach that we're taking. First, you know, knowing the threat is, of course, you know, step one for all airports, but then prioritizing those assets. I mean, that is the big step in figuring out, you know, what your goal is. Is your goal to maintain, you know, full commercial operation? Is it to keep, you know, going and ready during the event of a storm? What's your goal, and what assets help you achieve that goal, and what are their vulnerabilities? And from there, then you can kind of scope out exactly what you need to do. And that will be bite by bite, because there's some, you know, maybe easy wins that you put a storm door on a particular location, or, you know, you harden windows or something of that nature. But then, you know, there might be other projects where you're actually lifting a whole building or piece of infrastructure and elevation. You know, it's very multifaceted. There's a lot of different partners in play. I mean, even on our campus, we've got multiple federal partners, whether it be FAA, the TSA. We've got Department of Transportation, highways right next door, all of our utilities, whether it's stormwater, wastewater, is City of Tampa. We work with our local utility, because if our local substations go down, so do we. So it's really all hands on deck, a fully collaborative effort. But it does start by figuring out, you know, what wins you can get right away, and what you might need to put more effort into down the road.
Well, it's fascinating when you start naming all the federal and state, local agencies, utilities, all the various pieces that come in. It's in some sense almost like a city within the city, that you have to cover all of these agencies. You have to collaborate, you have to communicate, and then you have to actually take those steps to make it happen. And how do you find the collaboration and communication between the agencies and all of your stakeholders?
Yeah, well, Brian, that analogy is perfect because we use that analogy a lot, that an airport's the city within the city. I mean, to the point where we have our own transportation on campus, we've got our own fire department, our own police department. It really is managing a city in itself. And I can say that, you know, the collaboration is good and really increasingly becoming better and better, I think, because of the reality of the threats that we face regionally. We've got a great relationship with City of Tampa where we're on each other's boards and kind of guide each other in our planning. I was just on a planning call with MacDill Air Force Base the other day talking about resilience planning. So I think locally we're all realizing we all need to be part of the discussion. We need to be consistent in the planning that we're doing and knowing kind of what place in which we serve when it comes to preparation and recovery of an event. So really the collaboration, I think, is becoming that much more better because just the reality of what we all face together is becoming more and more glaring.
I want to kind of turn to that Hurricane Ian that came into the Gulf and was actually headed almost for a bullseye right on the airport. And Tampa International was in the sights of Hurricane Ian. And it shifted a little bit to the south. Not obviously good for those that were south, but certainly you dodged a bullet, if you can, in a big way, because it was such a tough hurricane, Category 5, a 30-foot surge that would have been devastating at the time. What did you learn from Hurricane Ian, and what's your approach to resiliency as a result of Ian coming through?
Yeah, Ian was really transformative to our internal planning processes when it comes to, you know, the resiliency program. What I can say we learned was really, it was the first time after Ian that we were able to visibly see what that level of storm surge looked like. You know, you hear a lot of projections, you hear different numbers talked about all the time, but I think we usually need a visual tool to understand what that means, what that looks like. And when we saw the storm surge going through downtown Fort Myers, you know, an area that we're all, you know, very close to, very familiar with, that was the conduit that we needed to really realize what that impact could be here locally. And that completely changed our resilience planning as it was, you know, the direction in which it was headed at the time. We initially did a vulnerability assessment in 2019 and outlined about 8 different vulnerability areas within the airport to look at. And that spanned a whole slew of different topics. I mean, we were looking at heat and electrical infrastructure and stormwater. We added vector illnesses throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, and just looking at those different vulnerabilities. And so as we were restarting this work post-COVID, we had the goal to look at all of these different vulnerability areas and create kind of a response plan to them. The first priority being updating our slosh modeling. And we did that, slosh modeling being our storm surge inundation modeling. And we very fortunately had completed task number one right before Hurricane Ian hit. And we were able to use that modeling to prepare the campus in certain ways, but also realize how ill-prepared we were for our different assets. And after Ian, we changed our priorities. Not that we don't care about a lot of the vulnerabilities we learned about in 2019, but our planning became almost predominantly specific to protection of storm surge. How are we going to protect our assets? How can we evaluate these assets to this recent slosh modeling that we did, and really focus on getting this campus resilient to that type of threat? We didn't shelf the other work. We certainly have it on the docket to do, but Hurricane Ian completely refocused us on storm surge protection.
Yeah, Ben, I know you've been engaged in similar efforts and looking at it. When you think about Ian, as Eric said, as a transformative hurricane that really began the transformation of the airport, what comes to mind in terms of the ability to switch and really prioritize where you need to go as a result? It was kind of a wake-up call, would you say?
I think it was, and I think it was one in a series of wake-up calls for this whole kind of approach, which we now call resilience. But I think, you know, you think back to Sandy, which impacted the Northeast several years ago. I think before that, people weren't talking much about resilience, or Katrina in New Orleans. And after those two events, you know, it became, I think, something that folks realized that was very much worth the investment. And and so here in Tampa Bay, I think Ian's having a similar kind of effect. I think the thing that is advantageous to the airport here is that they already knew that resilience was important. They'd already done some study of it back in 2019, so they had the platform to be nimble and pivot towards one. There's so many facets to resilience. You can't make progress on all the fronts at the same pace at all the time. So you have to prioritize. And I think Ian helped focus their minds and help them decide what they wanted to prioritize. And so now what we're doing is we're taking our understanding of the storm surge threat at the airport to a much more fine-grained level than previous, because we want to know what really could happen at the kind of the sub asset level, the system level. What about this particular chiller plant at this particular airside? What is its exact elevation and what are our options for protecting it, given that we know what the storm surge depth could be at that location because we just modeled it? That's where we're headed next. and I think the intention is that with relatively modest investment, we can get big protections for very key assets. And then I think looking forward, I mean, with Tampa continuing to grow, I don't know, it's an airport that is in growth mode. They're investing in major new infrastructure projects. Airside D is going to, you know, be a huge addition to their capacity. Well, this is an opportunity to design a new asset informed by their understanding of what's vulnerable. And so the work that we're doing now to get all this fine-grained understanding can go straight into that design process. And then this new asset can be built as a resilient asset from the beginning. So I think there's a lot of ways that this shift is going to, you know, pay dividends for them in the immediate future. And of course, it's June now and we're starting all over. The risk is here again. Yep. So our fingers are crossed and we're going to be making some progress this summer too on the resilience work.
Well, and I wonder, you know, as I think about how you all have navigated Hurricane Ian, a Category 5, it's probably good, and there's not much good of a Category 5 that it was, because you had an opportunity to see a close call, understand what that model would look like, and now take very immediate action. In fact, pivot, as you described, Eric, and change your focus for the Tampa International Airport to address those major issues. Can you talk about sort of when that happened for you? When was it immediately after Ian came in and then the realization? Kind of describe that process for us.
Yeah, I think it started, you know, right before, because when we were using the slosh modeling that we just did to prepare, you know, we were, for a lot of our assets, preparing to put sandbags out and using, you know, that slosh modeling to figure out where to put sandbags. And it really got a lot of our staff out throughout our campus and realizing, like, that's not going to cut it for all of these assets. And looking at items like our electrical vaults that are out there that you're not sandbagging. And really, we got our eyes on a lot of these assets for the first time, thinking that there was this impending storm surge coming. Now, certainly when Hurricane Ian came through, and Brian, all the things you mentioned, that visual tool that we've mentioned, I think was crucial. And I remember the first day I got back to the office after that storm, we had a team meeting and say, we need to start looking into protection of our assets ASAP. And that, I mean, we immediately hit the ground running right when we came back, but I could kind of start it feeling it coming as we were preparing for it. But it was that visual tool. And before I used the example of a video that the Tampa Bay Regional Planning Council, our Regional Planning Council, put together called Project Phoenix 2.0, where they created a video of what a mock Category 5 hurricane would look like hitting the Tampa Bay area. And they did a pretty incredible job. They showed all of the different assets, including the airport, including our main hospitals, and what they looked like underwater and what the devastation would be. And I think that was starting the resilience conversation, because even though it was a mock video, we had a visual tool, because it's hard to just see the reality of anything when you're hearing numbers. But Hurricane Ian hitting Fort Myers, Captiva Island, all of these areas that we love that are so close to Tampa Bay, completely changed the course of our resilience planning almost the next day when we got back into the office.
It's stunning to think of a 30-foot storm surge when you're, you know, when you stand 5 or 6 feet above the ground, you're saying now it's going to be 5 or 6 times my height, and sandbags don't get that high. And so you really get shot into a sense of action. And I really appreciate what you did in terms of not freezing in the moment, and you never freeze in Florida, but at the same time, you said, let's use this to transform and be transformative as a result of what we were able to see in the moment. How did the agencies respond, the utilities? How did that work as you began to say, this is what we have to do next? Did you find everybody in the same boat, rowing in the same direction?
You know, it's hard to say if everyone's going in the complete same direction. I think it started the conversations that needed to be had. We already have great relationships with our local utilities, even our local energy utility, Tampa Electric. We've got multiple different substations that feed the airport. We've already done a lot of the resilience work ahead of time. And so we've got a great, great team and really a great kind of readiness strategy already when it comes to this type of threat. And we know how to prepare, we know how to respond, but we I think where we were lacking was the necessary approaches to protect some of these assets. And I think we're all looking at that. I mean, I think Tampa Electric's looking at their substations and realizing these aren't completely protected to storm surge. I think City of Tampa is looking at their lift stations feeling the same way. So I think we're now all starting to row in the same direction. And I think a lot of that is because these examples that we've seen locally were now kind of part of each other's planning worlds. We're on the calls together. We're collaborating in that way. So, you know, there are some silver linings there that I think moving forward, we will be, you know, rowing in the same direction.
Brian, I think something you said just a second ago was key. I mean, they didn't freeze. This is scary stuff to study to begin with. I mean, I think there's something in human nature that we all have to face is that we like to avoid, you know, the scary thing, the bad thing. And sometimes we put off, you know, gaining knowledge about those kinds of things, or going through the process of gaining that knowledge can be take you to a dark place. I mean, we went to a dark place with Tampa when we did this 2019 study. We had to confront scary things, and I think Ian like made it real. But it's much better to have that insight. It's much better to know what the worst case scenario is, because you can start to plan your way out of it incrementally, and you're not alone in it. We were just talking to all these partners. You now know who your partners need to be. You can reach out to them, you can find the common ground, and you can start to pull your resources together, find out what your priorities are, and start to make some progress so that you know, if this does happen, you have some preparation, you'll have some protection, and you will avoid the worst case scenario.
I want to switch a little bit because we've been talking resiliency, but I know Hillsborough County Aviation Authority is also concerned with sustainability. And we often hear sustainability and resiliency in the same sentence, but they're a little bit different. Can you talk about why HCAA is concerned with sustainability as much as resiliency?
Yeah, I think it started with just some of the internal values that we have as an organization from the beginning. You know, when we really started doing sustainability work was late 2000s, and we were doing initiatives like switching all irrigation to reclaimed water. We were incrementally starting the sustainability program without really knowing it until about 2014, when we did receive that FAA grant fund to create our first plan. I think it just comes to the personality and the values of Tampa International Airport that we look at ourselves as stewards of not just the environment, but our community. I mean, we pride ourselves in doing the right thing. And a lot of the sustainability work is doing the right thing and showing the community, this is your airport and this is what we value. And we're doing this for you and to inspire you. And really just doing it for that reason. I mean, of course, there's, you know, financial benefits to, say, energy reductions and water reductions. And, you know, it's always good to kind of tell those stories as well. But really, the program started itself by just wanting to be that good steward of the community and showcase our values in a more high profile way. And then sustainability is just transformed into a lot of the work is just smart development now. You know, what we would have considered a sustainable development project is becoming industry standard. I think, you know, when you're recycling concrete or you're locally sourcing materials, that's just becoming, you know, what you're supposed to do. And it didn't always used to be that way, but it is now. And when it's coupled with resilience, you know, it's looking at also trying to mitigate the severity of the threats in which we face too. You know, what was mentioned earlier is we engage in carbon accreditation. So we're tracking at least the emissions that we're responsible for on site. And we've been doing that for a few years now. And we just want to show the community that's what we value. And that's the airport that hopefully you love to come to and use locally.
There's a lot of synergies between resilience and sustainability too. So it's really beneficial to think about them at the same time. I'll cite an example, Eric, if you don't mind. One thing we learned through our vulnerability assessment of the airport was that the backup power generation that the airport has is aimed at having enough power to evacuate the passenger occupied spaces. And that makes complete sense because their utility provider is so reliable that they never really need to worry about these kinds of power outages, and they're momentary. They evacuate the building and then they're back, their power's back on. But through a resilience lens, I think there's reason to consider whether or not there needs to be a change of approach to backup power generation. We learned that through the resilience process. But then the sustainability lens comes in and says, well, how are we going to provide that backup power? Are we going to have a giant diesel generator that will, you know, contribute to the global warming that is causing, you know, more intense hurricanes, which is putting the airport at threat? That would run counter to its resilience efforts too, ultimately. So, you know, the airport's now looking at ways it can invest further than it already has, and it already has some substantial solar power generation assets, but it's starting to look into those kinds of things. Hydrogen fuel cells, all kinds of different options to provide them resilience and sustainability at the same time.
Yeah. To add on to that, to a perfect kind of connection between the two. And so is transportation on campus. You know, there's a very real resilience benefit to looking at sustainable transportation when we're looking at our internal fleets and we want to add electric vehicles or hybrids, or same thing with our bus fleets. To diversify the fuel sources that these vehicles use makes you much more resilient. You know, in the case that we can't bring gas supply or the pipelines are down, you know, we might have our electric vehicles ready in need of storm response and vice versa. So there's a lot of connectivity, as Ben mentioned, between sustainability and resilience.
So wonderful connect between those two. So let's kind of pull them together for this last question before we get to our rapid fire questions. What might a sustainable and resilient airport look like in the future?
Yeah, I think we've mentioned a lot of examples of, you know, getting into our crystal ball of what we're going to see into the future. I mean, resilience planning is going to be a big piece, certainly for us locally, Florida airports, and when we're talking about lifting electrical infrastructure, hardening buildings, I mean, those are going to be design standards soon enough across the board for all new development and redevelopment. So that's going to be across the board. I mean, of course, different airports face different climate threats or different threats, but I think that's always going to be ingrained into the building and design process moving forward. On the sustainability side, it's going to be diverse transportation. You're going to have a large focus on electrification throughout the entirety of the campus. You're not going to have gas-powered transportation to your different airsides or your different terminals. They're all going to be electric. I think one day we're going to have to prepare for electric ground support equipment for the airlines, and then in turn, different fuel sources for airlines themselves, whether it be electric airplanes, hydrogen planes, planes that are running on sustainable aviation fuel. So airports are already looking out at how to design, you know, hosting those fuel sources. How are our fuel farms going to change to prepare for this incoming future? And so, I think that's how we're going to be looking at sustainable airports moving forward. Energy sources, whether it be solar on site to help diversify our energy sources as well. I think it's going to be holistic. And I think we're already making incremental steps to get there, where we can kind of see what the future is going to look like already. But it's going to be a full-fledged connection between resilience and sustainability when it comes to our assets and operations.
And so you embarked on this nearly 10 years ago with that first grant. And so now you've got that future ahead of you with Ian as a very significant reminder of what's at stake. How do you feel about the future and where you're headed? You feel good about it?
I do. I think we're doing all the right things at the right time. I mean, of course, you know, you could always think about the what ifs before, but I think we're taking the lessons learned in stride, and we're making the efforts that need to be made right now in order to kind of encourage a better future. And I think coupled with our values that I mentioned earlier, I'm actually really excited about the future of Tampa International Airport in a lot of different ways. I mean, we're already looking at, you mentioned LEED certifications and other third-party certifications for a lot of our infrastructure and our planning. We're diversifying our fleet. All of our trains are already electric. I mean, we've already really achieved some big wins on the campus as it is. And I think the values that our CEO, the executive team, and really all of our staff have set forward is showcasing a pretty promising future. And we've got these lessons learned that are in our very immediate past that we're taking in stride and really not wasting any further time on acting on them.
Let's jump into some rapid fire questions. We end every episode of AEC Perspectives with some different questions, kind of jumping off of our resiliency and sustainability questions. So, Eric, what's the best career advice you ever received?
Yeah, the best career advice that I've ever received that I like to kind of relay to anyone maybe starting their career or getting ready to start their career is to really just trust the process and try to stay true to who you are as far as the career that you've chosen. I mean, you've got different passions. We all do. We chose our different career fields for a certain reason. And I think it can be very easy to bail, particularly at a certain era in your life when maybe things aren't going quite to plan, or maybe you're not making quite the salary you wanted to make, or, you know, all of these extracurriculars that can really impact you. But I think if you stay true to the work that you're doing and the why that you're doing them, everything works out. Everything works out in the end, and it all develops as it's supposed to. You just have to really keep faith and trust that you made the right decision.
That's some great career advice, and trusting in yourself and in your path is huge. You know, at RSNA, we put a focus on mental health and wellness because it's a balance, right? The balance between work and your life outside of work. And so what's one thing that you do, Eric, to support your own mental health and wellness?
Yeah, I think that's really important question. You know, I love that that's kind of part of the main conversation now. It's a big piece of our internal culture at the airport as well. For me personally, I try to really be structured in the work-life balance. I think that not only benefits all the things that were just mentioned, the mental, the physical health, but it makes you a better employee too. I think we forget that, you know, if you can balance that life, you actually have a much more productive workforce as it is anyway. So I think you got to be structured. You got to allow, you know, work not to overwhelm you and kind of set those parameters. And I think it makes you both better person personally, but also better professional as well.
Well, thanks for sharing that. And that's something that we hold, one of our values is not only taking care of ourselves, but mentally, physically, spiritually, but also taking care of each other and being on the lookout for that imbalance that can happen from time to time. RSNH also has a brand essence. I know we've talked about that before. We call it Driven to Care. So when you hear that brand essence, what we are all about at RSNH, when you hear Driven to Care, what do you think of?
Yeah, I love that. First of all, I love that statement. I think that's a great brand essence. And what I think about is, you know, your motivation is for our particular purpose, which I think is to be both stewards of each other and stewards of the environment, and having a genuine care for both. And that being your really your true motivation, not just, you know, your 9-to-5 in the office, but, you know, who you are as a person. And I think that's such a simple statement, but really goes a long way and is something that we can all take, you know, home with us to kind of live by day. But yeah, you know, that motivation, it just shows, you know, what your values are as a company and what motivates you.
So Ben, I can't let this podcast end without asking you, as an RSNH associate, what does Driven to Care mean to you, Ben?
Well, that question is sort of easy and difficult at the same time. But I mean, I'm a sustainability and resilience professional because I'm driven to care. And I, like, when I thought, and it's interesting to reflect on what you said about career advice. I mean, I didn't start out in this career. I had a moment where I thought, what do I care about? You know, and it's not the job I'm doing right now. And I realized that, you know, what I cared about was the environment, the social, the society that I lived in, and then the economic framework that made it all possible. And so I realized I had to go back to school and become a sustainability professional. Because that's what I care about, and that's the way. And I wanted to have a job where I felt like I was going to be making a difference that would endure beyond my lifetime and would have repercussions, you know, well beyond myself. So sustainability and resilience, I think, are perfect for that kind of orientation to that driven to care ethos, because it those two subjects are all about seeking a way of living on this earth with each other in a way that has no limits to it, in the sense that we're here for the long term, we're here to thrive, And we just need to, you know, make a little tweaks here and there, make some preparation, do a little study, and come up with that strategy, and we can do it. And we as a species can thrive indefinitely. And that's really exciting. And that's why I wake up every day and come to work.
Well, Ben Moore, sustainability leader at RSNH, Eric Kaplan, the Sustainability and Resilience Program Director for the Tampa International Airport, heard some amazing terms throughout this podcast, from threats to readiness to protecting, preparing, prioritizing, bringing in your values, inspiring your community, being a steward, being holistic, and understanding that it all takes diversity, collaboration, cooperation, and action. What a great podcast. Thank you so much for being a part of AEC Perspectives. I am Brian Nickel, your host, and it has been a pleasure to have Ben Moore and Eric Kaplan on this version of AEC Perspectives. Thank you for listening to this episode of AEC Perspectives. Follow or subscribe to AEC Perspectives wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. And remember, at RSNH, we are driven to care.